This way.
Good evening. It's a real honor to be here. Heard a lot of wonderful things about solving for women over the years from the different teachers, the students who I've met, and it's a privilege to be able to be here and hopefully share words of, hopefully we'll try, for inspiration. As I was driving here, came in from Shalavim, I was driving by, more the better, thank you. I drove past Shari Tzedek, and I was reminded of an experience I had last year. At the time was a four-year-old daughter, had appendicitis. Hopefully none of you have ever had to experience appendicitis. A perforated appendicitis nonetheless, which means it burst, infection, and my wife and I, with my daughter, my four-year-old daughter, spent about 12 nights in the hospital in Shari Tzedek. Timing was perfect. The surgery was on Erev Shabbos HaGadol. We spent Shabbos, the entire Pesach, plus then even after Yitzchak Chag, 12 nights straight in Shari Tzedek. As I kept driving, I saw a sign for Hadassah in Kerem, and I was reminded of a different experience last year. My wife, right after Chanukah, was in a car accident. The car spun out of control, hit a light pole, smashed, she broke her ankle. It was 3 nights in Hadassah Hospital. Now, to break an ankle is very uncomfortable, as I could imagine for my wife, but it doesn't take 3 nights in the hospital to fix it. So what happens? It was exactly last year when there was a blizzard in Yerushalayim. The surgery was on Thursday evening. As we were driving towards the hospital, we got a call from the surgeon. Are you coming? So we'll be there in about 20 minutes. We did the surgery and we got snowed in. We were locked in, basically in the hospital, for 3 nights. A short while after that, I spent another night in Shari Tzedek with my youngest son, who out of a concern, maybe he also had appendicitis. After one time, one kid, not willing to take any chances. So I didn't come for sympathy. Baruch Hashem, everyone's healthy, my wife is healed, my children are healthy. And even as a child, I was never admitted to a hospital. So it was a new experience for me. And we're not necessarily prone to accidents. But over these experiences, over the past couple of months, you know, a year and a half, let's say, I had a very strong realization, something that you hear, but then you actually are experiencing it, that we're really not in control. On so many different fronts, we're not in control. You have a plan, where you want to go, what you want to do, and sometimes things work out, and a lot of times they don't. A lot of times the plan that you had set in mind, and we were banking on happening, doesn't end up happening. I'm trying to think of like a good opening story to come. And as I was driving, I figured I have a nice 40-minute drive to think of a good story. And I planned it out exactly what time I needed to leave, what time to get here. I borrowed my wife's phone for to use Waze and had everything all set up. And then as I'm going, you know, the main road I want to go on is blocked off. I'm like, this is horrible. I'm going to be late. You know, my first time coming to SFW, I'm going to be late. How could that be? Which is a little bit ironic, as you'll see, as we continue to talk throughout the night, not throughout the night, the rest of our time together. I share with you a fascinating and surprising Gemara that we can only talk about here in Eretz Yisrael. They might throw you out if you start talking about this in Chutz Aretz. The Gemara Nedarim on Chav Beis Amud Aleph describes something quite remarkable and quite strange. The Gemara says the following. This is Nedarim Chav Beis Amud Aleph. Ula b'miskei la'arad Yisrael itlavu lei tshein b'nei chuzai b'hadei. So Ula, one of the Amoraim, in the times of the Gemara, he was going from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, and he had an escort. Two people were escorting him. Two Jews. Kam chad shachtei l'chavri. And one of them got upset, and he killed the other person. You know what happened? He got upset, and he killed him. Sounds frightening. Amar Le Ula. So the murder turns now to Ula, one of the great sages, one of the Rabbanim, and he says to Ula, Yosavdi, did I do good? Is what I did, was that a good thing that I just did? Did I kill that person? So what does Ula say? Amar Le, in. Yeah, that was great. Upar Le Beis HaShchita. And rip open the place where he shot them, rip it open. Expedite his death. It's getting stranger and stranger. So Kiyasa Lekamei, the Rabbi Yochanan. So now when Ula finally gets to Eretz Yisrael and he comes to Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Le, Dilma Chas Hashem Achzike Yidei Over Aveira. Maybe perhaps I did something wrong. I was giving encouragement to a murderer. Ula's concerned. Is what I did, was that okay? Was that appropriate? Amar Le, Nafshecha Hitzalta. No, you saved yourself. What else are you supposed to do? If you tell the person, give him Musar, you did the wrong thing, he might kill you also. So you had to do it. It was Sakonas Tafashos. But then it was bothering Rabbi Yochanan. Something doesn't make sense here. Something's off. Katam Rabbi Yochanan, Michti. Ksi v'nasan Hashem l'cha v'sam le'rogez. HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes people angry. Or anger was placed in the hearts. But the Bavil Ksiv, that pasuk is talking about people in the diaspora, in Chutz Laaretz. Rabbi Yochanan was so astounded, how could someone get so upset in Eretz Yisrael? So Ula answers, Amar Le, Ahu Shaisa Lo Arinan Yardina. No, you don't. At that time we hadn't crossed the Yarden, we didn't cross the Jordan yet. We were in Eretz Yisrael. Oh, that makes so much sense, because he hadn't crossed the Jordan, and that's how there could be so much anger. And that's how we could kill someone. End of Gemara. It sounds like there's this correlation, a strange correlation, but or perhaps an inverse correlation, between anger, kas, and Eretz Yisrael. Then outside Eretz Yisrael, it's not that it's okay, but it's understandable how it could happen. But in Eretz Yisrael, how could that be? So, that's quite a strange point that we'll note. Moving on, also regarding Kas. This week's Parsha, Parsha's Vayakil, the beginning of the Parsha, the Pasuk says, there should not be fire. No fire should be burnt and kindling in all of your dwelling places. I've never learned Zohar in my life. And this could be even the first Zohar that I'll even quote in public. Perhaps the first and only. And the Shla HaKadosh, as well as others, the Bnei Sassar, quoted the Zohar, explains, what does the Pasuk mean that there shouldn't be fire kindling? B'kol Moshe Oseichem, in all your places on Shabbos, be careful that there shouldn't be kas. There shouldn't be kas, there shouldn't be machlokas. It causes the fires of Gehenna to burn on Shabbos. So, a different, but again, unusual, extra cautious perspective when it comes to anger and Shabbos. So far we have anger and Eretz Yisrael not going together, and now we have also anger and Shabbos not going together. One more example. The Shulchan Aruch writes, when a person davens, you have to be able to be focused, calm, clear, collected when you're davening. There's a big shaila about davening on an airplane. Should you daven on an airplane in a minyan? Yes, no. Some people say it's, you know, the obligation to try to be a part of a minyan. Others say no. It's disturbing to the other passengers. It's disturbing to the flight attendants. The smell of the bathroom, you can't hear. So about 11 years ago, I asked Rav Avidan. Rav Avidan was the former Rosh Yeshiva of Shalvim, prior to Rav Yaakovson Shlita. And I asked him the shaila, what should I do? Should I daven on the airplane or in the minyan in the back or not? And he told me something very profound. He said, first you have to have tefillah. And once you have tefillah, then you can work on adding in tefillah b'tzibor, tefillah b'beis medrash, tefillah b'rovam. But first and foremost, you have to be able to daven. And if you can't daven, you're so squished like a sardine in the back, and it smells from the bathroom, and you're getting pushed and shoved, that's not called davening. Another example, meaning when it comes time for a person to daven, in a place where you can think, you can focus, you can have your thoughts together. That's the type of davening that a person is supposed to have. So the Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Tzadik Ches that also a person shouldn't be distracted. If you have other things on your mind, and Mr. Brewer gives examples, also if a person is bekas, if you're bekas, that's going to disturb you from davening. So we have a lot of different things that seem like kas doesn't really fit with. So I'd like to try to figure out why and how we can fix that. Ultimately coming to a realization about Shabbos, which will hopefully, my hope, is to give you a beautiful insight and focus that can change your Shabbos every single week from now for years to come. So let's pull back from those examples and think of real life situations when a person gets angry. And from that we'll start to figure out. You know, maybe anger is a little bit too harsh of a term. We get frustrated, annoyed, aggravated. Don't want to say that I have an anger problem. But we get frustrated sometimes. Maybe some people do think they have an anger problem. But frustration we all experience. Annoyance we experience. Slight aggravation tends to happen. What's the common denominator? What causes that? Back to our driving example. I had a plan. It's supposed to take me 40 minutes door to door from shopping for men to shopping for women. That's the plan. And when all of a sudden you're met by traffic, what do you mean? That's not what I planned for. Come back to the room late at night, and or you're already perhaps back in the room and your roommate comes in a little later, turns on the light. How could you do that to me? It bothers us much more when we're the recipient. Are we as aggravated when your next door roommate was sleeping and their roommate came in and turned on the light while they were sleeping? We'd say, you know, it's not good, you should be more kind. But where's that emotion of how dare you? How can you do that to me? I Baruch Hashem have three wonderful children. Baruch Hashem, everyone should also have their own children. Bito v'zmano. And some. Okay, very good. You don't hear that by the voice. So, as much as you will love your children, and there'll be unconditional love, which children need to know, parenthetical commercial, children need to know that you'll love them no matter what. I always tell my children every night before they go to sleep, I'll love you forever no matter what. No matter what they did. You also don't get that in the... But, with that being said, when you tell them, you know, please pick up your clothes and put them in the laundry, the first time, and the second time, and the third time, and the seventh time. The first time was, can you please put that in the laundry? And the seventh time is, I told you to put that in the laundry already. Why? Why did that just happen? How many times do I have to tell you? If you have a sensitive ear, and I've been listening to all these examples, there's a key focus in all of them. I. Me. My plans for how long it took me to get on the for traffic, it was different. My plans weren't met. How many times do I have to tell you? How could you disturb my sleep? Anger is not an illness in of itself. Coming back to our hospital medical problems. That is not the illness. Anger, frustration, aggravation, those are symptoms. And people spend an awful lot of time running around chasing the symptoms, trying to cure the symptoms, without getting to the heart of the illness. If a person said, I have a fever, I feel a little bit warm, you would not tell them, well, you should go stand in the freezer. That'll help you cool down. And like my daughter with appendicitis, she's having acute stomach pain. You can't say, well, just, you know, let Tati rub the stomach for a minute and then they'll feel better. She calls me Tati, by the way. Because there's an illness there. The symptom is an experience of pain, but the illness is infection inside. And so anger is exactly the same. It's an outward expression of a much deeper problem, a much more fundamental issue that needs to be dealt with. And that anger is really a cover, a cloak, for what we refer to as gaiva. Gaiva, someone who's just self-centeredness. The world revolves and focuses on me. Which is not easy to hear. And this is something that everyone has to work on. And I don't intend at all to come to stand here to present that I have something that I have mastered, the accomplishment. But I've been Zolka through years of learning and from learning from my Rebbeim and understanding that this is what needs to be worked on. It's the sense of arrogance that I am in the center. The things revolve around me. If a person would have such a clear understanding of this world is not about me and I'm not in control. Hashem is in control. Hashem's in charge. Hashem's the creator of the entire universe. It's like a different definition of CEO. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the ultimate CEO that runs the entire world, that makes all the decisions. The CEO controls entire Olam. That's the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the CEO. If we would know that we're really just his employees, and we're the actors in his script that he's writing for us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the show, and it's not about me. Moshe Rabbeinu, who spoke Pe'el Pe'el to Hashem. You would think that Moshe Rabbeinu should have the biggest gaiva problem known to man. Yet, the Torah describes Moshe Rabbeinu was the Anam Mikol Adam. There was no one more humble than Moshe Rabbeinu. Ha. That's unusual. But if you have an understanding of what Anava is not a sense of low self-esteem, being inferior. True anava is looking at myself and realizing relative, this is what I am. But A, I was given most of these things by Hashem, my talents and my gifts. And whatever I have accomplished, I have so much more to accomplish. And whatever I will accomplish will pale in comparison to Hashem. I assume everyone here is from overseas originally, so that means everyone here was at least on one airplane in their life. And the cruising altitude of an airplane is roughly 35 to 40,000 feet. At that height, you can't really see anything. You can't see any people down below. So it would be comical if you could listen in to two people down here on Earth, and one person saying, well, you know, I'm taller. No, I'm taller than you if I stand on my tiptoes. You know, kids love to measure up who's taller. No, I'm taller. What's... That's such a short-sighted, literally, perspective to have. Because from 40,000 feet, you can't see anyone. They're just as minuscule. So as much as we think we are, but relative to Kadosh Baruch Hu, who can create an entire universe, Yesh Me'ayin, we don't really have what to be so proud of. And Hashem is the one who's in charge, not me. So that's why Moshe Rabbeinu, he was so close to Hashem, he had the greatest understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And with that his greatest understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in turn, he was able to appreciate the vast differential between where he stood and Hashem. And that's why he was the ultimate Anav. So if we would try in small steps, but if we would try and make a concerted effort to internalize these ideas that Hashem runs the show, we are not in control, then all of a sudden all of these different anger, frustration, annoyance, stresses in our lives will melt away. Because the mindset going in is I'm not in control anyway. And things don't have to go my way. So that expectation, very often the anger and aggravation comes when my expectations weren't met. I expected it should take 40 minutes. Now it's going to take an hour? That's annoying. I expect that I should have to tell my kid one time to pick up his clothes and put them in the laundry. That's what I was expecting. Well, maybe I was wrong. Maybe I should have had better expectations. Maybe it's dumb. As a good parent, I have to know that it takes kids 7 times until they actually do something. Maybe I, who was annoyed with the person who came and turned the light in the room when I was already sleeping, need to give the person the benefit of the doubt. Realize that maybe they didn't realize. Maybe they forgot. And at the same time, they also have a right to be in the room. It's not all about me. So all these things bring us back to the central point that we're not in control, that we're not in charge. But this is a very comforting thought. And this is a very healthy and helpful mindset to have as we go through our daily lives. And more often than not, that will be the best preventative medicine to save ourselves from these very negative experiences that we really aren't so proud to be in. There's a lot of chachma in preventative medicine. Some companies even invest. When I was in college, I did a study or a research paper based on a company which is called Pitney Bowes. Pitney Bowes found that they were spending an incredible amount of money on healthcare. It's a big hot topic nowadays. Healthcare. And so what they wanted to cut costs. So they had a brilliant idea. They didn't want to spend so much money on healthcare and paying for all their employees' time off and doctor bills and medications. So they had such a fantastic idea. They started investing more money into healthcare. They made their employees pay less to go visit doctors. They gave their employees a discount on their medications. They made an in-house clinic in the office. And they found, after a few years, they were saving millions of dollars. Because they were instead of working on the problem, someone who's sick, and then having to deal with that, they invested their money to stay healthy. And that their clients should stay healthy. It's a much better, much safer, and even more economical approach. Instead of getting sick and then worrying about those expenses, just try really hard to stay healthy. And in the long run, it'll pay off. Not to mention that once a person is in that sense of, how could he? I'm so angry and so upset. You can't get out of it. We don't think clearly. People do crazy things. There's a story that the Brisker Rav related. There was a politician here in Eretz Yisrael years ago, probably 70 years ago, approximately. Somehow the politician got into a big mess. And he came to the Brisker Rav for some sort of eitzah, some guidance how to get out. So the Brisker Rav said, I'm going to tell you a story. Back in Europe, every good town, every proper town, had a wagon driver. One loyal, trustworthy wagon driver. But, as tends to happen, wagon driver aged, and it was time for him to retire. The town didn't want him. How could you? You're our loyal wagon driver. No, I must. It's that time. Okay, fine, we'll let you retire, but not until you find a replacement, because we have to have a wagon driver. So that he agreed. And some young, ambitious young man came and said, I like the job, I'd like to be the wagon driver. He said, do you have horses? Yes. A wagon? Yes. Let me just ask you a few questions. Let's say you have some people in your wagon and you're riding through the forest and all of a sudden your wagon gets stuck in a ditch. what will you do? He goes, oh, I would start whipping the horses to get them to go with more energy. I said, okay, that's a pretty good idea. But what if that doesn't work? Then what would you do? I thought of that also. With two whips, they'd start whipping the horses ferociously in order to get the horses to really go and pull us out of the ditch. That's a pretty good idea. What if that doesn't work? Then what would you do? Well, if that would happen, so I would get out of the wagon and I would start pushing from behind together with the horses, you know, heave-ho, and get the wagon out of the ditch. That's pretty clever. What if that doesn't work? So he said, well, I guess then I'd have to ask all the men and the young boys to come out, and you know, maybe even the women and children to come, and we'll all push together. He says, that's okay. But what if that doesn't work? What would you do then? Thinks, long, anxious pause. Says, I don't know. I don't know what I do. So he says, you can't be the wagon driver. He says, okay. With his head hung low. So, okay, I didn't get the job. Wasn't meant to be. Things don't always go your way. But tell me. I'm just curious. You know, you're the expert. So what should you do in such a case? So he says, I don't know either, but a good wagon driver would never get himself into such a situation. And that's the true chachma, that our job is to not get to that point where we find ourselves helpless, we find ourselves, how could this be, enraged, and feeling like the world's crumbling around me because things didn't go necessarily my way. That's the real avoda that we have. With all of this, let's go back now and start to answer up our questions. We have the Gemara that spoke about a connection to a Kas and Eretz Yisrael. We had a Zohar which referred to a person needing to be very careful not to be Bekas, not to be in Machlokas on Shabbos. And we even had a reference that being in anger somehow is disturbing to davening. So let's go in reverse order. Connected to davening. Well, isn't it so clear now? If the anger is an experience and an expression of I'm in control and things aren't going my way, that's the antithesis of tefillah. We turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu knowing that we're not in control. Hashem, you control everything. And that's why we turn to Him to ask for our needs, to pour out our hearts, and even if not to ask, just to connect and to talk to Hashem, because Hashem, who else to turn to if not for you? So a mindset of anger is antithetical to tefillah. What about when it comes to our Gemara? If we go in reverse order. Shabbos is experience of enjoying, welcoming the Shabbos Queen, the Shechina. Welcome the Shechina to our homes. It's so anti the idea, the messages of Shabbos to be in a state of anger. Not to mention a tremendous chutzpah. You know, it's one thing to be angry, you know, in your own private area. But to go in front of the king and to be in the palace and stomp your feet and bang your fist and be screaming at other people because things aren't being done your way. Really? Like in the palace? Right in front of the king? We're going to carry on like that everything's not going my way? It doesn't fit. It doesn't make sense. So Shabbos needs to be void of all anger and all machlokas. And on that note also, Eretz Yisrael. What's special about Eretz Yisrael? Chazal say that Eretz Yisrael is considered to be like the palace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are Zoche, Baruch Hashem. I've had the Zuchus to be living here now for almost 7 years. Hopefully everyone will have enjoy and appreciate the time that you have now and with more time to come, Be'ezer Hashem. And part of the beauty is because it's a closer experience. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's place where He chose that His Shekhinah should reside. We're living with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So now we can understand the Gemara very nicely. Rav Yochanan was astonished. What? Someone in Eretz Yisrael would be so enraged? Because? Doesn't make any sense. How can someone have such a mindset of being so self-centered and so self-focused to the point of Ritzicha Chas V'Shalom in Eretz Yisrael? It was a pliya. How could that be? And the answer was no. They weren't in Eretz Yisrael yet. They didn't make it in yet. This Gemara in the Nedarim, there's a few other fascinating points about Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says the following. Amar Rabbi Yonasan, Kol Hakois Kol Minei Gehenim Sholtin Bo.
Yikes.
Anyone who gets angry, so different types of Gehenim rule over him. I saw three different Perushim on this. The Ran, he says, what does it mean that Kol Minei Gehenim Sholtin Bo? Someone who is in anger, that point of self-centeredness, disregard for Hashem, that Hashem's in control and not me, that could bring a person to kfira. It could bring a person to kfira of denial of Hashem, which automatically will bring him to a experience of Gehenna. The Rush explains differently. What do you mean the different types of Gehenim rule over him? Physically, there's physical harm, discomfort. You see a person who is always enraged, so tense, it could be hard to sleep, loss of appetite, high blood pressure, real physical harm. Meaning a person could be physically suffering because of what seems like just like a nice, nice midos, but that actually has a real effect. The Maharaj is a more sophisticated, abstract understanding of how Kaas leads to Gehenim. Kaas is something which is Ruchani, and someone who is Bekaas is basically detached, severed from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Gehenim in Shemayim, I'm just repeating what I saw, that Gan Eden is a place of kirva, connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, while Gehenim is a makom which is somewhat detached. There's a richuk from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's why that itself is the experience of pain and suffering, being detached and pulled away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, b'meila, someone who is bekas, that's exactly the place that a person earns, is to be experiencing that type of very unpleasant experiences in Gehenim. The Gemara Nedarim also says on Chaf Beis Amud Beis, "Kol Kois Afilu Shechina Eino Chashuva Kenegdo." This is really the Yesod. That someone who gets angry, the Shechina is not important. Why? Because there's no room for the Shechina. I take up too much room. It's all the center stage, center spotlight is on me. Nothing else matters. The Rambam writes that a person needs to go to every extreme. No middle ground. No. Sometimes by some meals, the Rambam says you should be in between, not too little, not too much. The golden mean, right in the middle. Not when it comes to kas. It's unacceptable. A person has to go to the ultimate extreme, no kas. Now we understand why, because it's so severe. There can't be any anger. So what can we do? And it can only be together preventative. Because if once we're in that spot, it's we're not able to think clearly. Almost like no longer considered to be like a ben adam at that point. So how do we prevent ourselves? So one approach to prevent is by thinking about this and working not on our anger, not on our frustration. It's not a matter of working on holding it in. It's a matter of keeping things cool. If you want to keep the pot of water from boiling over, so make sure it's either off the fire or you just keep pouring in cool water. Keep pouring cool water. Stay calm. Stay calm and start to train yourself to stay calm, cool, collected. V'yaretz Ramban. The Ramban's famous work that he wrote to his son, which is basically his mahalach, the way that he understands the person should work and develop himself and work on becoming closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And his opening remarks is that person's, all your words should be benachas. Dibur benachas, to speak in a calm, gentle way. And a person is speaking in a calm, gentle way. Even when you walk into a room, you don't feel like you don't need to walk in and be the center of attention, that everyone can hear you, unless you're being invited to speak and you have to talk loudly so everyone can hear you. But notwithstanding, you walk into a restaurant and you have to burst in and make sure that everyone knows that I've arrived and I'm here. You could be, you didn't say anything bad. This is not a matter of Lashon Hara, of Nivol Peh, of Rechilus, of Sheker. Just, I don't need to be so loud that everyone notices that I'm here. That everyone is focused on me. If we can start to work and train ourselves and appreciate the beauty of living a life benachas, in a gentle, soft, kind way, in a way that people will appreciate being around you, that I don't always have to make sure that I have the final say. That's also part of Dibur Benachas. If you're in a group, you're trying to decide where to go, the friends are getting together, where should we go to eat, so you have your opinion, someone else has their opinion. So part of Dibur Benachas is I don't have to have my way and make sure that my word is the last word. Present your opinion in a calm, non-forceful way. All these ways of thinking and speaking start to, I don't want to say train, start to develop and to carve a beautiful way of daily interaction with other people. It's a more gentle, a softer way. And that, Dibur Benachas, in a gentle, calm way, helps to refrain from kas. Nachas means calm, like Ba Shabbos Ba Menucha, it's the same lashon of Nach, Menucha, calm, gentle. So it's the Kas, which is like angry and chaotic. That's the Ramban's approach. So that's one example of how, you know, the way we speak. And now when you get angry, you can't like start trying to turn on the switch, that when I get angry, I'm going to turn on the on switch to start talking gently and in a calm way. It's too late. This is, even when things are good, in calm waters, to start making a strong effort to speak in a very calm, pleasant way. Because that already is triggering inside, I'm not in charge. The world does not revolve around me. Other people also matter. HaKadosh Baruch Hu also matters. And all of a sudden, you'll start to see slowly, that the things around you and the scenarios that were around you that used to be so aggravating and annoying, somehow aren't so bad anymore. Could be exactly the same things, but you're going to be a different person. You are going to be changed. The Rambam even writes that a person who, someone who's a Talmud Chacham, someone who's steeped in learning, it's considered a Chil Hashem for them to get angry. Why should it be a Chil Hashem for someone who's learned, who's someone who's connected and invested to Torah to get angry? Why is it a Chil Hashem? Same song, next chorus. Because it's a display of Hashem's not in charge. It's all about me. But another point of prevention that we can do, speaking specifically about Shabbos. So in the last few minutes focusing on Shabbos, and specifically Erev Shabbos. Erev Shabbos, without having ever been to any of your homes, I can imagine that whatever the average stress level or attention in the home is on during the week, it's elevated on Erev Shabbos. That's a safe bet, I think, that I'm willing to take. Baruch Hashem, I grew up in a very calm home, but Erev Shabbos is always a little bit more. Everyone's a little bit more on edge. Erev Pesach, Achas Kama V'Kama, which we're approaching. So, my Rebbe, Rebbe Nathan Shlita, who I was zochet to see today, before, as I was a chassan before my wedding, gave me the following etzah, or the following insight. He said, before you get married, as the wedding approaches, you can be sure that the tension is going to rise between you and your kala, between the families. That's just how it goes. But you should know, it's not for no reason. Do you know why it's happening? Because you're getting ready to embark on an incredible experience of Kedusha in your life. And the Sahara knows that it's coming. And the Sahara wants to do whatever it can to ruin that. See, the Sahara makes everyone a little bit more on edge and tense right before the Chasna, and right before Shabbos, and right before Erev Pesach. When during the week is our greatest experience of Kedusha? If not, Shabbos. Pesach, it's like the Leda of Am Yisrael. We were a nation born anew. It's like the Chag of Emunah. The Yitzhara hates this. This is horrible for the Yitzhara. We're about to step in to be recharged and get a boost of energy and commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the worst thing in the world for the Yitzhara. So what does he make us do? It makes the Erev Pesach the busiest day on the calendar, in order that hopefully in some homes you should be able to ruin the harmony and the beauty and the treasures that are waiting hours later by Leil Seder, or hours later by Lith Benchen, when it comes time to light Shabbos candles or sit to make Kiddush by the Shabbos Suda, or the time of Harayam Mekudesh Aslita, a point of Kiddusha. It's called Kiddusha, and it's not for no reason. The Yitzhar knows the Yitzhar is trying, working so hard. But if we know that going in, that we just have to be extra careful, and knowing that it's not the person's fault, it's not your mother's fault, it's not your father's fault, it's not your brother's fault, it's not your child's fault. Just to know that this is just the Yitzhar working in overtime. You just have to be prepared and do a little bit of background work beforehand. There are a group of people, a group of women, that have a special like club. It's called like the Chatzos Club. What's the Chatzos Club? It's a group of women that attempt and try every Erev Shabbos to be ready for Shabbos by Chatzos. Why? In order to block out the Yitzhara from that Erev Shabbos crunch, no matter what time Shabbos is coming, and if it's 4 in the afternoon or 8 at night, somehow we're always under the wire to rush and scramble, and why didn't you do this? We have to wash the lettuce, the kids in the shower. We forgot to put up a cholent. That type of experience. But if we make a point to not, don't let that window happen. Just cut it out of the week. Shabbos starts by Chatzos. Now this is these are like big aspirations. It's a lot to do. But I feel like it's important just to mention the concept. In my home, there was a while when a year or two ago when we tried. Then we had all these other wonderful things happening in our lives to kind of shook us off balance a little bit. So we're not yet back holding to everything ready and cooked and done, bathed for Shabbos by Chatzos. But we still have one thing that we tried to do. That the table should be set early. Sometimes even we try to set the table Thursday night. And you would be astonished. Little kids wake up. My little 3-year-old wakes up on Friday morning. It's Shabbos. You see the white tablecloth and the china and the Kiddush cup. It's Shabbos. And already, you're bringing Shabbos in early. Not literally bring Shabbos in early, but bring the Kiddush, the serenity, and the focus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in my life, the experience of Shabbos and Shechina being Shorah in our home. We're bringing it in early. It's also mentioned in the Shla. The Shla writes that a person should strive to, he says already, to have everything done by Chatzos in order to usher in the Kedusha and push out all potential kas, machlokas, just to get things done. Beat the madness. And whatever you can do, if you can't do Chatzos Lagamre? Okay. So try to do one thing. One thing. Maybe each week do one more small thing that will help make your Erev Shabbos not as tense. Because you can appreciate that I'm coming into Shabbos. I can't lose this experience. And to come full circle, if we've established and built up that Kaas is the antithesis to appreciating HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge. Hashem runs the show. And it's really not me. So during the 6 working days, we forget that because we're very busy on what I'm doing in my activities. And Shabbos is our refresh, our recharge button. It's almost like we have we can make it 6 days. But we need a 7th day, we need the Shabbos as a, to remind ourselves. You know, everything which is like wireless is only so far. The battery's eventually gonna die. I have to come back and plug back in, recharge. So we can go a good 6 days. 148 hours, Berach, that's all we can go. But we need a 24 hours. We need 25 hours of Shabbos to remind ourselves that HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Shabbos, Hashem, you're in charge, and to approach that properly. I saw the same idea quoted from 2 different people. One from Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, and one from Rav Soloveitchik. And they both bemoaned, which is the proper term, they both bemoaned that in America, Baruch Hashem, there are people that are from, people that are Shomer Shabbos. And Shabbos, it was said at the time, was okay. Shabbos has been saved. But what happened to Erev Shabbos? The Erev Shabbos has been lost. It used to be that people would really spend Fridays fully focused in the preparations for Shabbos. And nothing else. Focusing, getting ready to usher in Shabbos. But that's lost. And that, so you'd say, okay, so we lost that on 6 hours. We still have Shabbos. But without those 6 hours, that also affects the Shabbos. Going into Shabbos in a rush, in a frenzy, in a panic, having just screamed at the kids for what they were doing, hurts the Shabbos. It'll hurt your Shabbos experience. It'll hurt your kids' Shabbos experience. It'll hurt your spouse's Shabbos experience. The entire atmosphere of Shabbos is being diminished. So they both felt such a pain that Erev Shabbos is not what it's meant to be. I'll finish with one fascinating story that my wife showed me last night. That was circulated throughout this Chatzos group. There's even like a Chatzos like email list that the women get together and they write in like emails and chizuk of different stories, of inspiring stories, or to give each other courage and focus to try to really preserve Shabbos. So the story that there was a young widow who was looking to get remarried. She came to the Rebbe of Rimanov, Rav Tzvi Hirsch, for a bracha. She was looking to have children, and apparently she was having a hard time getting remarried. So she came to the Rebbe for a bracha. And the Rebbe asked her name, where are you from? And he asked her to repeat the name. Now the Rebbe, I think at this point, was in his 60s or so. And his eyes kind of widened. And he says, I have a perfect idea of a shidduch for you. And she's, you know, this like, her heart skips a beat. Yeah? Who? And he said, me. And she's like, turned like pale and like speechless. And tried to say something. And, you know, when you go to Rebbe and you ask him for a bracha for a shidduch, and then Rebbe says, me, like, what else are you supposed to say? So she says, if the Rebbe thinks it's a good idea, so okay. So the Rebbe calls his attendants that they should bring l'chaim, some mezonos, and they should celebrate the engagement that night. What's the story? So one of his attendants asked for an explanation. This is a little bit unusual, a little bit strange. So he said, I remember that name. When that woman said her name, I remember that name. Growing up, when I was a little boy, I was orphaned at a young age. And the town looked after me and saw that I should have a job. And I worked for a tailor, and it was my job every Erev Shabbos to go make the deliveries to the customers. They brought their garments during the week to the tailor for repair. And it was my job that I should now go and before Shabbos return all the new fixed items back to different homes. And there was this one family. They had a lot of children, Baruch Hashem, a lot of tailoring and hemming and sewing repairs that need to be done. And I frequently had deliveries to make to them on Erev Shabbos. And every week when I went, they greeted me in such a calm way. And I went, and the table was always set for Shabbos. Already on Erev Shabbos, the aura of Shabbos permeated the home. And I always thought to myself, I want that one day I should be able to marry someone just like that and have a home just like this. And I heard the name, and this girl, this woman, this widow, she was one of the daughters of that man that I used to make deliveries to. And she grew up in this home. And that is someone that I want to marry. Thank you for having me. Have a wonderful night.